Hey, this is Russell, and I work at The Video Store, the place that we can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to chat to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV?
How's it?
Hello.
Good morning.
Howdy.
All right. We got ourselves a full house
that was a bit
behind the counter here. Welcome to The Video Store. Thank you for wandering in to our lovely video store. It's raining. It's mizzy. We've been getting a lot of rain here in Joburg.
Mizzy.
You're Australian.
It's mizzy out there.
It's very mizzy.
Yeah.
So hopefully we can find you something to watch.
Yes.
In this very much movie weather here in Joburg. We've got ourselves a G-Force.
Good morning.
Who is an editor and very much the producer of this show. We've got ourselves a P-Dog.
Hello.
Who is very tired because he's one of those movie nerds that stay up and watch the Oscars when they happen live.
I'm mad with Cole because he's like, let's do 10 o'clock. And I was like, so I fell asleep and I'm like super tired.
Did you wake up early or did you pull an all-nighter?
All-nighter, baby.
Wow.
You could have just woken up at 3?
Oh, no, it started at 2 this time.
My plan was thrown out of whack.
I was like, fuck.
All right, so that's why you're here and that's why you work here. You also do lots of other things in the film world and industry.
Yeah.
And we've got ourselves a Cole Matthews.
Hey.
Who is a creative copywriter. And then you've got yourself a me, which is Russell. I am the owner of The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. And we're all very excited. This is our Oscars episode.
Woo, woo.
So the Oscars happened last night. We still have Perrin nodding off. And so we're obviously going to talk the most about the Oscars.
Yes.
And that's going to be the main attraction. I still think there's a couple of other things to talk about. I've got two TV shows I think you guys will be very keen on. Cole, you are going to love one of them in particular. And then we also do our movie news, which is our quick rapid fire, hey, did you guys see? So I think we should waste no time.
Cool.
And get into that straight away. All right. Hey, did you guys see Gene Hackman died?
Yeah.
We kind of all know that, I think. That certainly penetrated.
Yep.
It was a little weird to continue reading the article and realize that he died at the same time as his wife and his dog.
Yes. Very strange.
Yeah, Gad chimed in when on our chat to say it was most likely a gas leak. Is that right? Do we know?
I think so that was maybe speculation.
Your autopsy has found there's no sign of that. So
weird.
And so therefore we default to where both myself and Cole went, which was suicide pact, which is dark.
Yeah.
And then the
should we talk about this on air?
No, I know. It just got dark
pretty quick.
No, but my brain went to the same place, which was like the dog coordinated it.
Yeah.
But it's ridiculous. No, but obviously we just joke here, but for the last
what a legacy, hey?
For the last many years of his life we were sort of shielded. We didn't see him.
He retired like 20 years ago.
Yeah, but he retired without like making a fuss about it.
Yes.
Like he just stopped appearing in movies.
And his wife, I think, was particular about
their privacy.
Their privacy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's very interesting.
Should we quickly talk about name our favorite Gene Hackmans?
Oh,
I don't necessarily
I've got
have
two.
One. Okay, quick, let's go.
It's a tie between, you got to do French Connection. Conversation and The Birdcage.
Birdcage.
That's I think
he was in The Birdcage.
Yeah, he's the conservative politician.
Yes.
Okay.
One of my favorite moments in that movie is when he's forced to be in drag.
Yes.
And you have to double take. You're like, oh, that's Gene Hackman.
Crimson Tide's great as well.
What about Unforgiven, Graham?
Oh, I forgot he was in that.
You loved that movie.
It's a great movie.
It's a fucking great movie.
And Russ, for you, it'll probably be Royal Tenenbaums.
I mean, that's the obvious one.
Yeah.
He's the lifeblood of that movie.
Yes.
He's so good in that.
Yeah. Shit. All right. Do you guys have other ones? I've got one or two.
Yeah, I can do one. Hey, did you guys see that Technicolor is shutting down?
Okay.
What?
Yeah. So Technicolor is probably best known for inventing color in film, but subsequently to that, they've really gotten heavily involved in the visual effects industry.
Okay.
So they own...
They're an actual company by that name.
Yes, Technicolor. They own MPC, who's the visual effects company who did like The Lion King and The Jungle Book.
That's Disney, a bummer. The Disney live actions.
Yeah. And they own The Mill as well. They like, and all these companies are, who knows what's going to happen to them now, like massive visual effects studios.
It's ironic that Technicolor is behind the visual effects of Lion King and Jungle Book, which were very bland, visual, colorless movies. You know what I mean?
You need to go to sleep, bro.
I thought Jungle Book was nice.
The Jungle Book.
Well, you're talking about the live adaptation. Yeah, that was at least, that was cool.
Okay. Okay. I
like
that.
Oh, I'm remembering the, what, the, wasn't it like super like grim looking? Oh, fuck. I'm
you tired. Might be thinking of the Andy Serkis one.
I'm thinking of Mowgli.
The Netflix one,
Mowgli, yeah.
Okay, well, that's sad. Yeah, I mean, but I hopefully it's a restructuring of sorts.
Apparently they couldn't find investors to like bolster the company.
That
so.
Sucks.
Hey, did you guys see Francis Ford Coppola's Razzie acceptance post?
Oh my goodness.
Did you?
Yeah. No.
Did everyone read it?
No.
Okay, I'm just going to give you some of the highlights. this is on his Instagram. In the wreck of a world today where art is given scores as if it were professional wrestling, I choose to not follow the gutless rules laid down by an industry so terrified to risk that despite the enormous pool of young talent at its disposal, may not create pictures that will be relevant and alive 50 years from now.
I have a lot to say about that.
Yeah.
Especially with Megalopolis.
I was about to say, he's not wrong, but make a good movie to back it up.
Exactly.
Yeah, sure. Make one this decade.
I mean, Russ, you made a good point that when he's, I don't know if it was you or Graham or Cole, but like, I just named literally everyone here. Coppola worked best when he was under restrictions to like, if he doesn't get this made, it's like all over. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Megalopolis, there was no pressure to make it because it was all entirely self-funded. And he had no one coming in being like, whoa, this is fucking dreadful. You should fix it here.
Yes.
The only original screenplay that he had done that was like fucking amazing was The Conversation. And that's part of his... In the 70s, I regard Coppola is untouchable. Like probably the best filmmaker of the 70s because he had... Godfather 1 and 2, The Conversation, and Apocalypse Now.
That and the conditions that he made Godfather monstrous. Under were crazy. I mean, he was hand to mouth.
Apocalypse Now even worse.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean,
that's the documentary about the making of that.
Yeah, Hearts of Darkness.
Yeah.
Incredible. Wow. Like, so yeah, I mean,
hey, did you guys see that John Lithgow is going to be Dumbledore?
Yes.
Whoa!
That's good casting.
Shit, sorry, I haven't heard that. That's so good.
Yeah.
I love John Lithgow so
incredible.
Much.
This is in this crazy, big, upcoming Harry Potter TV show.
What are they doing?
Which seems
wild. Why the fuck are they doing
this? I don't understand why they're making it. They shouldn't make it, and they don't need to make it. But, good casting.
Yeah, I know the whole vibe is because it's now going to be more... Like a bigger, it's going to be an adaptation of the actual books. So like all the stuff that was
Neglected because of runtime.
Yeah, but like weirdly neglected. Like Kira complains about it to me all the time.
Yeah, we all have movies. Those people in our lives.
A lot of extra characters, a lot of extra stories that we obviously had to miss.
Mm.
But it'd be cool if it actually is quite a big difference.
Yeah,
you know, if the scenes that we know.
Yeah.
Are downplayed or kind of shortened and the other parts are heightened, it could be cool. It's like,
Harry Potter, did you put your name into the Goblet of Fire?
He said calmly.
Yes.
The Once Upon a Time in Hollywood book that Tarantino read, it's like the main plot points, the home invasion scene is like a paragraph. The rest of the book is all the other extra stuff.
Yeah.
So he knew that you'd be reading this as a fan of him having seen the movie, so it wasn't just a retelling of the movie.
Yeah, you have to do something new with it.
Yeah,
300 pages of feet.
Yeah.
The rest of the story, baby.
Yeah, if anyone, I bet there'll be fans who have something to say about that. There always are. But they should just go watch him play Churchill in The Crown.
Oh, right.
Who, Quentin Tarantino?
No,
we should do this, Sharon Tate.
You know, oh my God.
You're talking about Lithgow.
Yeah.
Gordon
is great in that.
But speaking of Lithgow and speaking of conclave and the Pope. Hey, did you guys see the Pope's not actually doing that well?
Yeah.
The actual Pope is a bit sick.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it comes strangely timed around conclave being in the Oscars, which is all about the
exactly
the picking of a new Pope.
Yes.
One of which was John Lithgow as a contender.
Yeah.
And my friend Chris just went to the Italy around that area for a 3-week vacation.
Oh yeah.
And he's like, fuck. Now the city is just like full of people.
Yeah.
Like, because those crowds that in that event.
Vatican, yeah.
It's an interesting moment. And of course, what's very interesting about the film Conclave, which was up for one of the Oscars that we up for many Oscars, which we're going to talk about today, is that you actually don't see the crowds. It's all internal. It's all
you
in
hear
the
them.
Yeah, it's a very interesting choice. I've just realized that now, that you actually never see the crowds gather. Obviously, that would cost a lot of money to do, but
like,
also it was a choice to keep it, you know, in these sacred rooms as they have to vote on the new Pope.
Yes.
It's like we always see on the news what's happening outside. We're never let into the Holy of Holies, like the conclave space, and that's what the film does so well.
Yes.
Yeah. Banger.
Does anyone have any other hey, did you guys see? Because otherwise we should get on to our Oscar chat.
I can quickly do this one. Hey, did you guys see? We've got a very first brief look at Shrek 5,
which
looks very slightly different, which
it's
means
weird.
The internet is furious.
Yeah.
Because it's very slightly different.
They're gonna,
very slightly.
They're like going to bully them again.
What is the differences?
They've just slightly changed the character designs, which of course is unacceptable.
Yeah, the eyes look weird.
Because in this, I don't think it matters in the slightest.
Yeah.
Animation changes.
Yeah.
But also,
design trends change.
You're also seeing there's that group of people where everyone hates Zendaya, apparently.
Oh, yeah, because Zendaya's in it as well.
Yeah, and of course it's just closeted racists, you know, and sexists. They're like, a woman that in our legacy.
Also, apparently, she's Shrek's daughter.
Yeah.
In the previous films, he had 3 kids, which leaves us to presume that 2 of them are dead.
They were eaten by Shrek.
Yes, there you go.
Or just, you know, studying abroad. Yeah, let's see.
Get over it, internet. It doesn't matter.
2025 is going to be an interesting year, man.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good stuff on its way.
I think that movie's only 2026.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Shit.
It's end of next year.
Yeah.
Oh, God. All right. Cool. Let's get into it.
Into the Oscars.
All right. P-Dog?
Cool. All right.
What is your plan professionally, by the way? Are you just going to go to sleep after this?
I'll take a power nap, but I've got other things
to do. You got to work.
Yeah.
All right. So
got edits to do. And I've got
cinema is life.
And I've got to do my top 50 list, which is fucking destroying my soul right now.
You got to do it.
We're all waiting for it.
No, exactly. Like I told Kira, I'm like, I can't wait for all 3 people to read it and myself. but no, I do it for me essentially. So I was really looking forward to it because, you know, Conan O'Brien is one of my idols growing up. I used to, when he was on CNBC Africa in his late slot.
Yes.
Yeah.
We used to tape those shows.
Yeah.
So, and he got weird and fucking strange in those shows.
Yeah.
And I've loved to just... Simpsons, some of the best jokes were written.
Yeah, he was a writer for The Simpsons.
Mr. Plow, the monorail episode. Yeah. Some of the best commentary tracks as well, if you can track down the DVDs.
Oh, yes.
So he initially said that these Oscars weren't going to be as planned as the other ones in terms of hosting it. He was going to be more like, let's do this, right?
Yeah.
So it felt like that. It felt very loose, but there were also small little details that I really liked. So Nick Offerman was the announcer.
Yes.
Oh, cool.
But there were like fun little moments where he would mispronounce Amy Poehler on purpose. He's like, Amy Poehler? And then move on from that. Conan, his opening monologue was great.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
Yeah,
it
wasn't too offensive, but it was offensive when it needed to be. he dragged the right people. He made some great jokes about Russia when Nora was dominating. He was like, oh, wow, you see, so it's not Americans do want to stand up to powerful Russians. And the crowd was like, oh. And there was the other ones. Oh, when Flo won Best Animated Feature, he was like, Latvia just won their first Oscar. Balls in your court, called Estonia. but then when the costume designer for Wicked won, first black man to win that award, he's like, balls in your court, Estonia.
My favorite was he gave a baby girl a shout out. I just listened to the opening monologue. Have you heard the joke?
No.
He's like, Baby Girl wasn't nominated. He goes, in Baby Girl, Antonio Banderas played a man who couldn't give his wife an orgasm. It was his hardest role yet, like his most difficult role.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's like, you should have come to me, man. But one of my favorite jokes as well at the halfway point, he goes, it's now the halfway point. That means Kendrick Lamar is going to come out and call Drake a pedophile. And he's like, and everyone's like, oh, and he's like, I'm lawyered up, don't worry about it. But yeah, there were great moments like that. There was a very quintessentially Conan moments that in the right mindset could flop quite significantly if you don't understand his humor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the bits was the sandworm from Dune studied at the Juilliard and played the pianos in his I Won't Waste Time skit, which is a musical number. But ironically, so the highlights, Conan was great. The speeches, there were some phenomenal speeches. Kieran Culkin telling his wife to, he's like, you promised me a full child if I won an Oscar.
Yeah.
Do you remember saying that? And she was like, oh shit. And he was like, yeah, Oscar time, baby.
Time to deliver.
Yeah. That was a great speech. But the best and most important speech of the night was No Other Land, the Palestinian Israeli co-production.
Yeah, this one best documentary.
Yeah, we knew that was going to win. It was either going to be that or Porcelain War, which is about Ukraine. But that was important because it's an Israeli and Palestinian filmmaker.
Wow.
And the Palestinian was the speech was just really powerful. But it was important what the Israeli guy said because he even straight up was like, I have rights, he doesn't in Israel. Mm-hmm. And he straight up was like, he's like, the hostage situation is terrible, but the genocide is terrible as well.
Yeah.
Like, he was basically saying you can't be outraged by the one without being outraged by the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
a lot of people need to hear that.
Yeah. And I just know all those pro-Zionists are going to call him a Jew-hating Israeli.
Yeah, like sure. But
Waste
time on what the people say. Let's just talk about what we heard last night.
But that was an incredible speech, really important. Obviously, Latvia winning their first Oscar was really lovely. Cool.
Shout out to me about 5 episodes where I said Lithuania.
Right.
I got them confused.
Common mistake.
So yeah, I was very happy about that. But overall, I was very happy about how things went. The lowlights, the shame. I love Adrian Brody, but his speech was way too fucking long. He got played off, but he was like, no, he was funny. He's like, I've done this
him
before.
Do you remember him doing it the last
yeah,
time?
He's like, this isn't my first rodeo. But then like he just kind of dragged it on a bit, so everyone else after that like rushed kind of.
Okay.
But I mean, there were very few lowlights, if I'm being totally honest.
Okay. Cool.
Kieran Culkin shouting out to his fellow cast member from Succession, Jeremy Strong, he was like, you're fucking great, and he's like, oh, I swore, whoops, and like,
yeah,
it was a very typically Kieran Culkin speech.
Yeah.
But Sean Baker was wonderful from start to finish. Yeah, two lowlights. So ironically, Conan had the whole I'm not going to waste time musical joke bit. But then there was the James Bond
joke,
the James Bond musical tribute thing. I don't know why.
You were talking about the comment in the beginning where he sort of announced an Amazon as the James Bond. It was kind of funny,
maybe
a bit of a waste of time.
But I think...
Sorry, he did a musical number.
No, he didn't. So it was a James Bond tribute music thing. Doja Cat sang, which is an odd choice. I don't know. But anyways.
Doja Cat doesn't scream James Bond.
Yeah, it was
but also 2024 has got nothing to do with James Bond.
Yeah, so it feels like, I don't know if Amazon bought that slot.
100%.
Yes, definitely.
100%.
Because they've taken control of James Bond, obviously.
Yeah, they want to remind, so it's a classic marketing.
Yeah.
They want to put it back in the consciousness. They want to have people talk. They want to have it discussed. They need to sort of bring it back.
The hype.
They need to bring it back from the dead long before they say anything.
And I mean, the thing is like, because I read that they were saying that, it was a tribute to the broccolis, not the vegetable. You have like the vegetable and you go, what a vegetable.
This general knowledge bit is missing from my knowledge. Who are the Broccolis?
So they were the family that owned the rights to James Bond.
Yeah, they were always the producers. It was Albert Broccoli.
Elvis was him and his wife,
and then it got put down to the daughter.
So they've been
managing the and holding the IP of James Bond,
and had creative control
for something like 60-odd years, right from the beginning.
Yeah, so people are worried that obviously Jeff Bezos, because he started out with who should play James Bond, and of course all the fans are like Henry Cavill. But I love Henry Cavill, but
let's focus.
Sorry. Anyway, so that tribute was strange. It didn't need to be there. And then the In Memorial was fantastic. Morgan Freeman came out and introduced it, starting with Gene Hackman, because they were very close. So it was a very touching tribute. There were notable people left out, unfortunately.
Yeah, they always are.
Tony Todd from Candyman, obviously.
A
woman from... Buffy that died.
Michelle Trachtenberg.
Yeah.
Recently. Hey.
So like people were upset about that, but there's always going to be someone left out. Yeah. But that was recent.
So you can't really, they'd have to re-edit it and
stuff. But Gene Hackman was also recent. But Gene Hackman, it's Gene Hackman.
Yeah.
You know.
But also big highlight was Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande's opening number was incredible. Holy crap. They both are so good live. It's insane.
Yeah.
Like, I've always known Ariana Grande to be that good live, but holy crap, like, blew me away. It was a good night, man.
Nice. Lovely. Cool. I'm glad you put in the time.
Yeah. Conan at one point said, he's like, if you're still enjoying the Oscars, you have something called Stockholm Syndrome.
Where would you rank Conan as a host?
Look, he's not Billy Crystal. And he even says, because Billy Crystal presented the last award with Meg Ryan. And he even said he was like the greatest Oscar host ever. And Billy Crystal was my host growing up.
Yeah, so, me too. Yeah. I mean, we're of all that of age.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I didn't have Bob Hope because he was well before my time. He did 19.
Yes,
he but
I
still think he was good. I think he might have been a bit too weird for most people's tastes. I think a lot of the jokes were like so like... They were like...
Conan was too weird.
No, Conan, I think... Because I fucking love Conan, so I was loving it. But I could hear a lot of the people in the audience didn't quite get some of the...
It is a bit off-kilter.
Yeah.
There was one year where they made a really cool decision, which was to have previous winners stand in that semicircle and introduce the nominees of the category.
Okay. So
which
still,
I thought was a really smart choice. Did they do that again this year?
So they still do that with the acting categories.
Okay, so they did that last year.
The way they presented the awards is great. I loved it. Like for costumes, for instance, cast members introduced it. So Bowen Yang was the only one in costume. He's like, guys, I thought we agreed to this. And they're like, no, we thought it'd be cringe. So they didn't do it. Yeah, that was really cool. Tarantino announced Best Director. He is cocaine incarnate.
He is. It's nuts.
He was very Ridley Scott, Quentin Tarantino. But yeah, overall, it moved nicely. Just Adrian Brody's speech slowed everything down towards the end.
Interesting.
So I was like, I want to go to bed.
Okay, let's do a quick brush through the through the categories.
Yes.
Graham,
you lead the charge, baby.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So we're going through them in the list, in the order that is on the official Oscars website.
Cool.
So we're beginning with Best Actor in a Leading Role.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have Timothée Chalamet, Coleman Domingo, Ralph Fiennes, Sebastian Stan, and the winner, as we said, Adrian Brody.
Yes.
Okay. Cool.
Who here has actually seen The Brutalist?
I have.
Oh, of course you have.
Yeah.
I have screened it at my cinema.
You haven't seen
but
it yourself.
I haven't had the time to watch it.
Okay, let's make a date, guys.
Yeah, let's go watch
it. Yeah, it is screening at the Bioscope in the week that this episode is coming out, this coming Saturday.
Yes.
I have to carve out 4 hours in our schedule for it.
Yeah.
Because it is almost 4 hours. So we haven't had the chance to screen too much of it, but it's always been popular when we have.
Okay.
So.
Yes.
It should have been Colin Domingo. Yeah, I haven't seen
totally
it.
Totally agree.
That was my choice too.
Yeah, yeah, having seen all the nominees, really? Colman was my favorite by far. I think
it was special, man.
It was incredible.
It's a special performance. I think I'm just baffled that A24 didn't push harder for Sing Sing.
Yeah.
Like at all.
But maybe they did. It's just this is the world we live in. If we're outside of those bubbles.
But the thing is, Sing Sing's release schedule was bizarre. Like barely anyone saw it.
Very interestingly, it got released in prisons.
Yeah.
And one of the first movies to do so.
Wow.
It had a prison wide release.
Wow.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
And it's important. It's an
important
movie.
It's one of those
movie.
That for everyone outside of prison, this movie very briefly has you understand what it feels like to be trapped and to be stuck in prison.
Yeah.
And then I'd imagine for anyone in prison, watching this movie would help you understand your way out.
Mm. Yes.
Both literally and figuratively.
Yeah. I think, my call was Chalamet. I know you did as well, Graham.
I believed Chalamet would win it just purely by
the SAG.
Well, just also by the sort of popular vote. You know, people would want to see this kind of new young buck make his way. Brody's already got his.
Yeah, exactly. But one of the two anonymous voter ballots didn't vote Ralph Fiennes because they were mistaken that he had won before.
Because they thought that he won it for Schindler's List.
He should have won, but Tommy Lee Jones won for playing Tommy Lee Jones. next category.
Okay, so but next category is actor in a supporting role. So we have Yura Borisov, Edward Norton, Guy Pearce, Jeremy Strong, and Kieran Culkin, who won.
Strong category, yeah?
Yeah, I think we knew that one was pretty locked in.
Yeah, the supporting actor categories are always locks, like early. Like actress and actor, for over the past 10 years, it's always been determined so early on because they don't lose anywhere else in the road.
Yeah. But it's a lovely role because if you're in a comedic film, to be the supporting actor, you get to always be funny.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, or you get to always be witty, where your main character is often the nuanced straight man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is an easier one to see.
Mm-hmm. But I still think Clarence Macklin from Sing Sing should have at least gotten a nomination.
Yeah.
I
would have put him there as well.
Yeah.
But yes, it's such a strong category. I mean, Jeremy Strong
is a good lineup.
Phenomenal as Roy Cohn. Jesus.
Still haven't seen that as well.
Yeah. It's what's so good about The Apprentice is, especially from Sebastian Stan's point of view, is that he doesn't turn Trump into a caricature, which is so easy to do. He makes him feel like a real person, and it makes it scarier.
Nice.
That
The Apprentice to me feels like it'll be a lovely historical document.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be one of those that wasn't quite recognized at the time, but when we look back, we'll be like, interesting.
Because
we're going to try and look for these kinds of artifacts.
Yes.
And that film would be one of them.
Mm-hmm. I just love Sebastian Stan making it so hard to break out of the MCU machine.
Yes. Yeah.
And he makes such interesting choices. Mm-hmm. And I love Sebastian Stan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Next category is actress in a leading role.
So
fucking happy about this.
Cynthia Erivo, Carla Sofia Gascon, Demi Moore, Fernando Torres, and the winner, Mikey Madison.
Yeah, that's cool, though.
Excellent.
So happy. I mean, look.
I think everybody thought it was going to be Demi Moore.
It's Demi.
Yeah. Demi, excuse me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, she had her little moment, which is cool to see the recognition.
Mm. Yeah.
And for her to get like a little bit of a nod, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But then you watch Nora and you can't deny Mikey Madison.
That performance, Demi Moore is so good in The Substance, but because for my list, I had to rewatch everything.
And
I had to. Like,
you put so much pressure on yourself.
No, I really do. I'm an anxious ball of mess. Mikey Madison in Anora is just unbelievable. It's a star-making turn. It deserves the Oscar. It's the best fucking performance of the year. I mean, shit, I'm dying to see I'm Still Here.
Yes.
Which I can't access, unfortunately. But Mikey Madison, the way she just handles, it's a physical performance that is also so nuanced. Like, she's angry and she's quiet and she's reflective. And that final scene in the fucking car is just perfection.
Yeah. It's so vulnerable as well.
It's that scene for me is what the film is about.
Yeah.
It's about making a human connection and about, like,
for me, what it's about is that's the only language she knows.
Exactly.
That's
the whole point.
That's the only way she knows to sort of say thank you or or what she expects men to want. Mm, it's it's so nuanced. And then, of course, when it ends in tears and just also the way the movie ends.
Yeah, no music. It's just music. The sound of the wipers. Yeah.
And as I was watching that as incredible. A cinema owner, immediately I was like, this is going to be a tough box office because you leave it sad and heartbreaking, which you should. In good art, it's meant to kind of punch you in the gut. It's meant to do these things. Despite this movie actually being quite fun, quite silly, quite you know, fun escapades, but it leaves you a little heartbroken. And then immediately was like, I don't think this movie is going to do incredibly well at the box office.
Yeah.
Where also if people watched a film like Better Man, for example, it leaves you going, fuck, that's great. That awesome. And same as Challenges. Yeah. It just leaves you going, fuck, that's cool. And you just want to go and tell someone.
That final scene is also just example of really incredible writing, is that one of the major points in a film is you establish what your protagonist wants and what they think they need. And then in the final arc moment where the character arcs is when they realize what their actual unconscious need is, right? So that in that moment, in that scene, we see what she actually needs, and it just ends. It's fucking perfect.
Lovely. And so we are going to do screenings.
Nice.
At the Bioscope, I left these gaps just ahead of the Joburg Film Festival, which is coming next week. I just left these gaps for whatever was going to win Best Picture. And so it was cool. We've done screenings of Anora before, so I just quickly duplicated them.
Nice.
So those are on sale Friday and next Tuesday.
Okay. Link in the description.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, so now, animated feature film.
Ah, yes.
Inside Out 2, Memoir of a Snail, Wallace and Gromit, Vengeance Most Foul, The Wild Robot, and the winner was Flo.
Another stacked category.
Yeah. I haven't seen Flo.
A good year. Neither
Flo is incredible. So Wild Robot's beautiful, but so I called Flo would win. You guys were like, no, it won't, you fool. and it did, you motherfuckers. no, you guys didn't behave that way. But Flo, just the way it was made on such a limited resources, on money, on everything, it's just so great that it's so good to see that the animation category is now finally being respected. So over the years, it's always been a category that has been treated as a kiddies movie category, right?
Yeah,
right.
So voters, especially anonymous voters, which are either they're so maddening to read, but often they would be like, oh, I just let my kid choose the winner of that category. Yeah.
And it's often gone to the Pixar films, sort of, or the Disney's, big budget ones. So as we said earlier, Flo is Latvian.
Yeah, it's a super low budget.
And there's no speaking.
Yeah.
It's all animals. What's the sort of loose story?
So the loose story is there's a black cat, which apparently the cat is named Flo. It's in a humanless world. We don't know what's happened. It's clearly post-apocalyptic, but we don't know where the humans have gone.
Okay.
But nature's regained the planet, basically. And what's happening is this impending flood throughout the movie. The movie's just a flood scene. So this cat is forced to make friends and team up with other unusual animals to survive. And that's a Labrador, a capybara.
Capybara.
A bird, a giant like stork kind of bird thing.
Crane.
Yeah, crane. Yeah. And Madagascar, what are those?
Like a lemur.
Lemur.
Oh, okay.
And it's just beautiful because also the animals behave like animals. Cool. There's no dialogue needed to put anything across. But what I love most about it, and that's what Boy and the Heron did so well, is that it doesn't feed you answers.
Okay.
There are things that happen where it's left to you to interpret it. These specific visions and stuff like that, it doesn't tell you what it means. And I love that about movies like that. I mean, Boy and the Heron last year beat what everyone thought was going to be Spider-Man. And that's why I feel like the category is now being taken seriously.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's nice to see one that seems to actually deserve it. This is a pretty egregious category for like why you're giving it that one. 2014 is the one I always think about. We spoke about this last week, actually, where you had How to Train Your Dragon 2, the Lego Movie, Tale of the Princess Kaguya, Big Hero 6-1.
Yeah.
Which is like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, they always go for safe bets, right? Yeah. So it's also this category, Memoir of a Snail, it's nice to see more adult themed animated films in there. I mean, a few years ago, Flea should have won best animated feature. Actually, it was an animated documentary about a refugee in Denmark. But anyways, A Memoir of a Snail, it's stop motion. It's extremely depressing. I think it's a bit of misery porn, but it's nice to see movies, like serious animated films like that, be in the category.
Because Inside Out 2 could have won just based purely on popularity.
It's still a great
movie. It was one of the highest grossing animated films of all time.
Yes.
Until our Chinese friend came and and beat it. So it could have been a shoe-in, but it wasn't.
Who was the Chinese friend?
There's this Chinese film we've been talking about. Sequel. Gad brought it up. It's
Measure
2 is now the highest grossing animated film of all time.
Wild.
It's made almost $2 billion.
What? In China alone. China,
So it's the only film to ever earn $1 billion dollars in a single market.
Yeah.
China.
Shit.
Yeah.
And we know next to nothing about
Trump
it.
Would say China.
China.
But the Wild Robot would probably get my...
it would get my vote because I hadn't seen Flow.
I've told you guys about the little playful Oscar... like win categories I've been inventing.
Oh, yes.
You always talk about gooey movies.
Yeah.
I think that's the best gooey movie of the year for me. It's just like sub from start to end.
Flow is sub central.
Really?
Yeah, no.
Sub central.
I watched it with Kira because I needed to rewatch. And I was like, Kira, let's watch Flow. And she's like, okay. She was fucking sobbing every single word. The cat's in distress. I'm like,
Was this yesterday or was this
weekend?
No, this
was a week ago. She was like done. She was like sobbing.
Yeah,
like,
I put my wife through Conclave yesterday.
Was she sobbing uncontrollably?
No. She's like, it's a bit weird. It's a bit arty. It's a bit slow. She's like it picked up.
It's so good.
We'll get to it. Anyways, I wasn't wowed by it.
All right. Are we going to do short films?
Just quickly brush over it. Okay. The Bioscope every year does the Oscar-nominated short films.
Yes.
It's a big highlight. In the live-action category, we had a South African film called The Last Ranger, sadly didn't win.
Yeah, but we have animated short
films. Let's do animated first.
So we have Beautiful Men, Magic Candies, Wonder to Wonder, Yuck, and In the Shadow of the Cypress.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of any of these.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is that these shorts happen and you don't get a chance to watch them, let alone all in the same place.
Yeah.
And that's why we screen them every year, so people get to see them.
Yeah, those are also very contentious categories for voters as well, because they're so hard to access all those films. It's almost impossible. The only categories that are really... like almost more accessible as documentary short. There's always New Yorker or whatever.
Yeah, and those are often made for social media, or they're made for news. And so,
so unless you don't have a festival at the Bioscope or VPN paying for this viewing, you won't be able to watch them.
Well, we've still got some more.
If you're not a voter,
throw them up on YouTube distributors.
Exactly.
Like, you know what I mean?
You're not going to make money with them any other way. You put them on YouTube.
Exactly. Yeah.
Get a couple million views.
I'm pretty sure the animators themselves would prefer that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think these kinds of package license deals, which the Bioscope has, and I know it happens in other cinemas around the world, perhaps there's a little bit of that, and then hopefully they can live on in YouTube afterwards. Some of them actually are on Netflix. Are on Disney.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know The Last Girl, The Only Girl in the Orchestra or something. You know, these little shorts that are on Netflix. So
there's the Indian, the one Indian in
live action
short,
Okay.
Cool.
Moving on. Cool. Cinematography.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we have Dune Part 2, Emilia Perez, Maria, Nosferatu, and the winner was The Brutalist.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay, as the only person who's seen The Brutalist, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think Greg Fraser was going to win again.
Because he won for the first one.
Yeah, my theory is that Dune won 6 Oscars. Only won 2 tonight. I think it's going to be a case of Fellowship of the Ring, I think, won 4 Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
Two Towers, I think, only won 2 or didn't win any.
Definitely won visual effects.
Yeah, and then Return of the King won 11. Yeah. So I think it's due in Messiah, you know what I mean? Villeneuve, come on, baby.
Come on, baby.
but I'm shocked Conclave wasn't nominated in this category, and I'm shocked Nickel Boys wasn't nominated. Nickel Boys should have won. But I'm happy with Brutalist winning.
Okay, cool.
It's a great looking film.
Nice.
Emilia Perez doesn't look that great.
It's not a good movie.
Okay. Yeah, it's like visually, I'm like,
Yeah, there's so much wrong with that movie. It's got a lot of good intentions, but it's so insensitive.
Misguided. In how
it approaches it. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Okay. Let's not focus on that one.
All right.
Okay.
We're moving on?
Yeah, let's move on.
Costume design.
Nope.
Cool.
So we have a complete unknown, Conclave, Gladiator 2, Nosferatu, and the winner was Wicked.
Of course.
Lovely. Easy. No, I think it deserved
it. I think it's a good choice, yeah.
And I think it's also worth pointing out Conan O'Brien's heartfelt moment in the opening monologue, which is, it's very easy to see the Oscars as a bunch of pretty people coming together and patting each other on the back and, you know, us it being this kind of vacuous sort of silly parade, but in the wake of the fires and everything sort of happening in the world. But he's like, don't forget, this is very much about the craft.
Yeah.
And it's about the thousands upon thousands of people that aren't famous, that aren't pretty, that come and get these awards. And so these are the costume people. This is the wardrobe, the set, the makeup, even the visual effects. It's this, don't forget, is a celebration of them.
Yeah, it's historic win as well. First black male to win costume design. It was a great moment and a nice speech and well-deserved. Great costumes.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. Definitely. Lovely.
All right, I'm going to skip directing. I'll do that second to last.
Cool.
Cool.
So we have documentary feature film.
Yes.
Yeah, we touched on that. So I think let's also not...
Yeah, we don't have to...
We don't have to waste too much time, but it went to...
No Other Land.
No Other Land.
Yes.
Yeah, the only, only ones I haven't seen there is No Other Land and Porcelain War because it's hard to access. But I think it's an important win and it needed to win.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so documentary short was The Only Girl in the Orchestra.
Mm. Yeah, which is available.
Yeah, on Netflix.
It's on Netflix. Okay, yeah, so go and watch it, yeah.
So now we move on to film editing.
Mm. Cool.
The Brutalist, Conclave, Emilia Perez, Wicked, and Anora 1.
Okay, so at this point, Perrin, give us your very important nugget.
Okay, so if you want to win Best Picture, you have to be up for either editing or screenplay. I think actually both is...
And ideally win them.
Yeah, so essentially it's very rarely has it happened if a film has won editing and a screenplay award have gone on to lose Best Picture.
Okay.
If it's split up, it's still... So I called differently for Best Picture. I called that Conclave would win editing. Yes. And adapted screenplay, which means it would win Best Picture. The moment Anora won original screenplay and editing, I knew Anora was going to win Best Picture.
Yes.
Sean Baker, editor, the dude won 4 fucking Oscars.
Right?
Yeah, it's worth mentioning because now we will get on and get to his other 4. But he is the first person in history to win 4
on one night,
4 Oscars on one night.
Alfonso Cuarón nearly did it for Roma, but Green Book beat him to Best Picture.
Yeah.
Wild.
Fucking so he's insane. He's holding morons. 4 Oscars in his name, man.
That's insane.
And they're great speeches as well.
Okay.
I was going to say, Challenger should have at least been nominated.
Definitely.
For instead of Wicked.
For editing. 100%.
Yeah, instead of Wicked, definitely.
Wicked's editing was not great.
No.
Yeah.
It irritated me.
No, we pointed that out, and then it found itself in
just like
the Challenger's just fucks. It's so good. Yeah. Oh, my God.
It fucks on so many levels. Dude.
Like, dude, without fucking at all, you know?
Exactly. That's the thing. You're watching sex on a tennis court. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's so good on that music just... pumping in. Every conversation I want to have from now on, if there's any slight conflict, I just want fucking Trent Reznor techno music.
Right?
Yeah.
Lovely.
Okay, best international feature. I was very confused by this for a second because I thought, wow, there's a lot of movies named after countries, and I realized they're listing the country and then the movie.
Yeah.
So
they're in for a theme this year.
Yes. Let's just go straight to the winner. I'm Still Here from Brazil.
I really... wanted Kneecap to be in the running.
No, it wasn't.
And it swept at things like the BAFTAs. It did all these things, and it felt like a shoe-in because it was one of those films that we screened at the end of last year, at the beginning of this year, and talking to the guy who bought the rights to it for South Africa, we kept speaking about, you know, hopefully it will be in the Oscars. Mm. Hopefully it could win an Oscar. I think between all of us, we felt like it was a shoo-in, but it was just a pity that it wasn't.
I would take Emilia Perez out and put that in there. If there was any justice, I'm still here. I called that as well because the momentum for Emilia Perez just got swept away.
Yeah.
And so I think the deserters from Emilia Perez went straight to I'm Still Here.
Right. And that is a Brazilian film.
Yes. Yeah. First Oscar for Brazil.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
City of God didn't even win, which is crazy.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Did Godzilla win last year?
No. It won Best Special
Effects.
It was
nominated, though. Wasn't
yes,
it?
Okay. It won Best Special Effects.
Oh, I wish Godzilla had won. Godzilla winning best, like a best feature at the Oscars is just such a delightful thought.
But that was a stacked category as well. Important films. My favorite of the lot was Girl with the Needle. Very dark.
Okay.
Film. That is coming to the bioscopes.
Oh.
We're screening it as part of the Joburg Film Festival.
Cool.
Yeah. So yeah, I made a point of making sure that was going to be in the bioscope schedule.
A people's movie. I'm Danish. So yeah.
Oh, cool.
Okay, makeup and styling, hairstyling. A Different Man, Emilia Perez, Nosferatu, Wicked, and the winner was The Substance.
Of course, had to be.
It had to get something like that.
Yeah. It had to be.
Yes.
Absolutely no contest. Sorry.
Yeah. Cool.
Sorry to Nosferatu because that was also pretty great. But
yeah, I think also those categories, it's generally what's the flashiest.
Yeah.
And they like to make a point whenever they announcing the nominees. They always like to make a point that these costumes are telling the story of this person and stuff. And yes, sure, but like The Substance definitely had that, you know, like this character is slowly being fucking chipped away. Eventually.
But it wasn't in visual effects. I mean, so much of it was practical, so that immediately becomes makeup.
Yeah, exactly.
A body horror. It's like, fuck, it's all makeup.
So good. Glad. Yeah.
It's also like one of the few categories where horror kind of gets taken seriously.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, music original score. Conclave, Emilia Perez, Wicked, The Wild Robot, and the winner was The Brutalist.
Deserved.
Cool.
Challengers should have been there and won.
Absolutely.
100%. I mean, music's supposed to drive. I mean, I'm not saying.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
But
Challengers should have been there instead of Wicked. I'm baffled that Wicked was there. I mean, I know apparently.
It's also half of it's pre-written.
Yeah, exactly. You
know? But the part that everyone's thinking about when they vote was written decades ago.
That's what I'm saying. That's, I think people nominated because they thought, oh, all these cool songs. But like, I mean, sure, there's enough new music there to be qualified, but it's not memorable.
Especially since it's a 2.5 hour long movie and probably less than an hour of that is going to be songs. So there's going to be more than an hour of score.
And it reminds me of the live action Lion King where you're like, you get one more Beyonce song and it's dog shit. It's like nobody remembers that song.
But okay. Challengers, man. Should have been Oscar
Absolutely,
number three.
Absolutely, dude. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Okay, music original song, The Journey, Like a Bird, Mi Camino, Never Too Late, and the winner was El Mal from Emilia Perez. Yeah.
Should have gone to Elton.
All right.
Don't care. He's always the better
Like
song
a Bird, writer. Like a Bird from Sing Sing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, that's right.
I don't remember it.
That's the closing credits song. Go listen.
Okay.
Gary to piss tears.
Well, I was pissing tears, but I wasn't thinking about
aware
the song.
Of the effect.
That song category I never really care about because the songs are usually
unless there's like a
shit.
Really particular song that like stands out. Yeah, which they so very rarely is, to be honest.
Like that was a cringe moment when Emilia Perez won Best Song. The composers went up and they sang the last part of their speech.
Oh no.
Torture. I was like,
oh no.
Oh.
And was it the I have a vagina, you got a penis part?
Yeah. Vagina
penis
to penis.
Vagina.
Yeah. Hello, nice to meet you. I want to talk about a sex change operation. Interesting though.
How the fuck do you win best song for that songwriting?
Yeah. So interesting,
Oscar voters.
Jacques Audier, the director, won his Oscar for that. He was one of the songwriters, apparently. Which is
stick to directing, bro.
It sucks because one point on that. It's just such a bummer that his name is attached to that movie as such blatant awards bait movie because he's a fucking great filmmaker. He did A Prophet. He did The Day My Heart Skipped a Beat. I think that's the title called. He's so fucking good. A Prophet is one of the best prison dramas ever made. It's so good.
Yeah.
He's such a great filmmaker.
No, so unfortunately he's tied to it.
Anyways.
Best production design. The Brutalist, Conclave, Dune Part 2, Nosferatu, and One by Wicked.
Of course.
Yeah, it makes some sense too. All those sets were practical.
That the wizard head thing was fucking impressive.
Yes,
Jesus.
It was beautiful. But like, unless I'm missing something about the production of Conclave.
Yes.
Like, didn't Michelangelo do half of that work?
So,
why was it nominated?
Good point. But
did they recreate it?
From what they showed, yes. So that's one thing that I liked about what they did was they really, like the music, they talked about the process behind going writing the songs. Best Picture had the director talking about their intentions and stuff like that. So it was cool that they showed that like Conclave was all fucking, most of it was rebuilt. Because they obviously can't shoot in those places.
Yes.
But Wicked deserved it 100%.
That was beautiful.
My one contention with Wicked is if you look at like making of behind the scenes stuff, a lot of stuff that they built was replaced with CGI.
Oh, yeah, fair
enough. A lot of like the big head you're talking about was CGI.
Oh, fuck off. That sucks.
Because they couldn't actually make it like speak. It was like just too big to actually build that. So they had a real one there, but they replaced it with CGI to make it actually articulate. And even like a lot of like the background sets and stuff were replaced.
It was Christopher Nolan.
To make like bigger and stuff.
No, have you heard?
Christopher Nolan making Wicked is a hell of a thought.
Have you heard? So, because he's doing the Odyssey, right?
Yes.
One of the fucking monsters, like the Cyclops, it's going to be practical, apparently.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
I really hope there is a Cyclops.
Yeah, I think there will be.
I wouldn't be surprised if they also do like stop motion stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That seems like very Chris Nolan, especially after the stop motion stuff they did in Skeleton Crew.
Yes.
Looks so good.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if they go, okay, that can look incredible. Let's.
That like tulip field in Wicked was
real.
Yeah. Which reminds me, funny enough, of Christopher Nolan and Fields.
Yeah.
They planted the wheat, and they actually ended up making money as a production.
Oh, that's crazy. Because
they harvested it afterwards and sold
genius.
It.
Crazy.
As a, like a commodity sale.
Just a note on this production design. We spoke about it before.
Yeah.
But Nathan Crowley, it's his first Oscar.
Really?
And His filmography, just for people that don't know.
So who was he for?
Well,
what film was
I remember
he on?
For Wicked.
Okay.
And his filmography includes The Prestige, The Dark Knight, John Carter, Dark Knight Rises, Interstellar, Westworld, Dunkirk, The Greatest Showman, First Man, Tenet, Wonka.
So he's you.
So like an incredible production designer, you know?
Wow.
Okay. Nice.
Cool. Moving on. Live action short film. One, but I'm getting for these ones. I'm going to skip straight to the winner. Mm-hmm. I think I'm Not a Robot. Again, a movie I've never heard of.
Apparently, it's really great.
Okay, well, what an Oscar, so I would assume so.
Dutch.
Okay, sound, which is a category they like changed a few recently.
Yeah,
it used to be sound editing and sound
mixing.
Design.
Yeah,
and they figured out that audiences don't know what that is.
They don't give a shit. So
it used to be two categories.
Yeah,
yeah, I know that's too much.
Yes. So we have A Complete Unknown, Emilia Perez, Wicked, The Wild Robot, and Dune Part 2, 1.
Yeah.
Well deserved, I think,
yeah,
yes.
100%.
Yeah.
I think the only one I could see beating that was A Complete Unknown, because they like the whole live music aspect of it.
Yes.
I think it was on one of the tours I did. I don't know whether it was Universal Studios or the Warner Brothers set, but I was somewhere in the States where I was in this booth. And it was a big screen, and there was a scene from the movie Gravity.
Oh, sick.
And there was the whole sort of exhibition as part of this museum was breaking up the different sound aspects. And you had these buttons, and you could take them in and out. So there was
like
dialogue.
Stems. Yeah, that's cool.
Then there was sound effects. Then there was the music.
Okay.
Then there was the foley. There was all these things. And you realize in that moment, like just in some scene, that you take for complete granted where there's bashing and speaking and all these things, you know, I still think your average person doesn't understand Foley. They don't understand that every splash, every step, every creak, every knock, every little fucking glass hitting the table is put in afterwards.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's editing and sound design are the invisible art forms, right?
Yeah.
Like if you notice it's there, then it's doing a bad job. Exactly. If you don't notice it's there, then fucking phenomenal.
You notice it in like a student short,
yeah.
Where when the table gets put, when the glass gets put on the table and it's fucking loud, that's when you realize, like, okay, that's why there's sound mixes.
Yeah.
But that's why also editing is also another strange category, because voters usually vote for something that's the flashiest.
Yes.
They don't take into account pacing.
The subtle of it.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Or the right cut at the moment. So like Anora was fucking edited phenomenally.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about it. Yeah.
Exactly. But I mean, like Bohemian Rhapsody, when you watch that movie, you're like, this is edited, and it's badly edited. Yes. And that fucking won, because even the guy who won it was shocked that he won. He was like, how did I win? Because it honestly felt like a cat walked on his
editing table.
I was like, oh, get out of here, Misty, you know.
And then by the time he put it down and relooked the scene, he was like, oh, that's not bad. Yeah. That's not bad. Yeah. Oh, well done, Misty. Whose cat's called Misty?
I don't know. I panicked. It came to me.
Okay. Not bad.
All right. Best visual effects. Alien Romulus, Better Man, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, Wicked, and Dune Part 2.
Yeah, Dune 1.
Wicked.
As the winner, Dune Part 2.
I would have liked to have seen Apes.
Planet of the Apes.
Apes or Better Man.
Yeah,
Better Man was such an accomplishment.
It's like, the year of the ape, man.
Yes. Yeah. But like,
maybe
the
there
stuff,
were too many apes. Maybe that was the problem.
Too many damn fucking monkeys.
That,
you know?
Stuff, like, again, like I've said this before, we take a lot of the stuff for granted. But Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, some of the visual effects in that movie are unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, they are so far ahead of everyone else.
Actually,
in the industry.
It's worth checking out Corridor Digital reacting to it.
Yes, I remember they did.
Oh, like, cool. If you want to, like, understand why it's good,
yes.
I think. They go through the process of describing that scene.
What is that?
Oh, the scene in the river.
Yeah, it's a YouTube channel, Corridor Digital.
Yeah.
And it's VFX artists reacting to good VFX or bad VFX.
Yeah.
And what they discuss there for that film is kind of just like, oh, wow, that is fucking incredible.
I remember watching that scene that they're talking about. There's a scene that takes place in a river. Yeah. I remember when we watched that in the theater, and I was like,
how do you make that in a computer?
It sucks because it would have been justice for the previous Apes trilogy that didn't win a fucking single thing.
It's wild.
And do you know what's crazy to me? I don't know if you see it differently. I think the visual effects on the last one was better than Kingdom of the Apes, and it's older. There are points where you actually forget that they're fucking not actual monkeys talking acting. It's
absolutely
insane.
This one, they seem to have like personified them more, so they don't look quite like...
But
actual apes the way they did in the previous
but it
one.
It makes sense because they've evolved.
It's exactly. It's like thousands of years
later. Yeah, how many years did
I can't remember exactly, but it's been a really long time.
Yeah. How many years, Graham?
I can't be mad that Dune won because the visual effects in the movie.
So
the thing about Dune is you don't even think about it as a visual effects movie because the visual effects are so like perfectly integrated. There's thousands of visual effects shots in that film, and you don't think about it as a VFX movie. Because it's all... It's like so... The vision of it is so like complete because you have a guy like Denis Villeneuve like crafting this movie. So everything is like within the same like stylistic framework. That's why the visual effects like integrate so perfectly.
Yeah. Mm. Yay, Dune.
Oh, yeah. Great movie. Okay. Writing adapted screenplay. A Complete Unknown, Emilia Perez, Nickel Boys, Sing Sing, and Winner Conclave.
Yeah,
was it a book?
Yeah.
I assume so. Either that or they put it in the wrong category and it won anyway.
No, but maybe it was something
King's
else
Speech.
Or it was a play or something. That was more my question.
King's Speech, that pissed me off when it beat Inception to Best Original Screenplay. King's Speech is a fucking play.
But we're talking...
And it was under original screenplay.
Oh, okay, I was about to say, why are you bringing this up? But that makes sense.
Weird.
Conclave deserved.
Okay, so this is obviously, it's in the name, but just for the explanation, the difference is this comes from something.
Yes.
Mm. It's not an entirely original story.
Yeah.
And so we're assuming it's a book.
Yeah, it is a book. Yeah.
And, okay.
Yeah, Nickel Boys would have gotten my vote, so I've read the book.
Okay.
And I was worried when... the film they were going to do it entirely POV, so the POV switch. I thought it was only going to be one, the protagonist, but it switches between the two boys.
Okay,
but the way he wrote that is because cinema is the power to create empathy, right?
Mm.
By putting you literally in the shoes of these kids in a racist Jim Crow era boarding school,
okay,
is just unbelievable, and it's not straightforward as well. He'll write little moments like so that you get a feeling of being a person in this situation.
Sure. Wow.
So like paying attention to the hem of his mother's dress, or, you know, like little things that make up what being a person is.
And did you feel that in the book of Nickel Boys? Did they sort of point out the same kind of nuance?
Not like that. The book is a different feel. I feel like the reveals in the book are more powerful.
Right.
But wow, Nickel Boys is such a special film.
But sorry, was that nominated?
Yeah, it was.
It was nominated. Okay, but Conclave won.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm happy with it winning. It's a great screenplay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, nice.
Lovely.
It's based on a 2016 novel by Robert Harris.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's an odd category because it kind of can come from anywhere. Like, did you guys know technically The Fast and the Furious is an adapted screenplay?
Because it's
based on...
Point Break, right?
No.
It's based on the movie it ripped off.
It's based on a... article for like a magazine article. Wow. Yeah, that's where the guy got the idea from. Was he wrote like a whole article, like a journal thing about underground street racing. That's where the movie came from.
Did Fargo, because I remember like one of my favorite things about Fargo is it's based on a true story and it's not at all. Like, I think it was under original screenplay. Yeah, it won original screenplay.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because everyone was like, oh, it's a true story. And I love how the TV show just leaned into that every time as well.
Yeah, and like, I guess the Pirates of the Caribbean would be based off the...
Yeah, because it's based on a ride.
It's based on a theme park ride.
Isn't there another movie about someone believing that Fargo is actually real and looking for the money?
It's called, it's Japanese, a Japanese woman is in search of the duffel bag in Fargo. Because she watched a tape and she thinks it's real.
Yeah.
It's so good.
This is a documentary.
No, it's a film.
It's a film.
It's called, I can't remember the name.
Yeah, I can't remember what it's called.
It's a great movie. The directors did a movie called, Jesse Eisenberg plays a Yeti, basically. It's a family of Yetis.
Yes, I heard about this.
It's like one of the weird movies.
Yeah,
it was called like Sasquatch Sunrise Sunset or something.
Sasquatch Sunset, I think.
Okay.
They directed it. It's a great movie.
Oh, really?
And that's based on a true story as well.
Okay.
So it's based on a true story of a fake story. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
Okay, writing original screenplay. The Brutalist, A Real Pain, September 5, The Substance, and the winner was Anora.
Yeah, I'm happy.
Sean Baker at it again.
Yeah, my man.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen The Substance win.
Okay.
Just spread the wealth a little.
but it wasn't so much about the writing. Although it is, obviously it's the point of the movie, it's written, but it made sense that the crafty stuff got the Oscars for Substance.
Yeah, I think, Nora's a great script, though. Mm. It's a good category.
Yeah. It's often a very tough one. Mm. Okay, so that cues us up for the next two awards. We're going on to directing now. The Brutalist, Brady Colbert, A Complete Unknown for James Mangold, Emilia Perez, Jacques Audiard. The Substance, Coralie Forget. And then the winner, obviously, Sean Baker for Anora.
Yeah, I'm happy with that.
So at this point, it's also worth mentioning that Complete Unknown hasn't won anything.
Yeah.
Luca Guadagnino should have been nominated for directing.
Sure. Mm.
It should have been nominated for original screenplay as well.
Okay.
But directing, I'm fucking happy. And
with the winner, definitely.
Because also he's a proper indie filmmaker.
Yeah, that's something he said recently, where he's sort of given his thoughts and opinions on the on the cinema industry and at the Spirit Awards.
Yeah.
Okay.
He just sort of said, "I'm indie through and through."
Yeah.
So
another funny thing in his editing speech, he's like, "I just want to say, I watched the footage of that scene that they just showed, and I saved this movie." He's like, "That director should never work again," which is a really funny little joke, like towards himself.
Say that again.
So with each editing thing, they show like a clip, right?
Yeah.
And it was the scene where they're all fighting in the house, where she's screaming, right?
Yes.
And of course, it's absolute chaos.
Yeah. And he went up there and he's like, "Okay, I've just got to tell you that I saw all the footage of that day, and I got to tell you, I saved this movie." And he was like, "This director should never work again."
Okay. The joke being, he was the director.
You get the footage and you have to fix it, right?
Yeah. So he was probably like, "Fuck, I really fucked up."
It was intense set piece because she was being held down, they were fighting.
But the real miracle of that scene is that it's really funny.
It's so funny.
Like, how do you make a home invasion funny?
Yeah.
No, like, and of course the nuance.
What the fuck
are
you doing? Why are you tired? She's gonna run. Just untie her.
It's like, why are you panicking?
Yeah. That guy should have actually been nominated.
Yes.
The Godfather to the son.
Definitely.
Oh my fucking god, he's so fun. He's in almost every Sean Baker movie. Tangerine. He's the Defoe to the director. And he's Armenian. He's so funny, man.
Okay. I think this is actually a good thing for James Mangold as well. Because the internet is such a short memory. They'll go, okay, James Mangold has made mostly really good movies. And then he makes a bad Indiana Jones movie and everybody goes, oh, he's a bad director.
Yeah, people have short memories.
Yes.
Yeah.
But now it turns, oh, he actually does know what he's doing. Let's remember that.
Yeah, I mean, Walk the Line is one of the best music biopics ever.
Yeah, I don't think we should ever judge directors when they're making like $300 studio movies.
Exactly.
Because they have no control.
Yeah, it's not their film.
Yeah.
And it's just worth pointing out that for Sean Baker, you know, it was small. It was tiny. Yep. I mean, it really, apart from perhaps getting a jet, maybe some Vegas scenes closed down, but you can always get access to a mansion. Apart from that, like, it's indie as fuck.
Yep. Yeah.
And
to the point where actually, like, the lighting is a bit shit. Not shit, but it's natural.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's often very dark and very dull in the movie, but so he shouldn't have gotten any kind of cinematography nods, but that could be something that anyone could make anywhere.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
And how amazing is it that, you know, it could be a stripper from Boxburg and it could be, you know, Nigerian parents. Yeah. You know, like it could have been anyone anywhere. Could have won at Cannes and won all these awards at the Oscars.
Yeah, yeah, I think also, I mean, but that's also the ethos of Sean Baker is that anyone can do it. I mean, Tangerine was shot on an iPhone. iPhone 5, actually. But also, that's one thing that also I knew that Sean Baker was an easy win for Best Director is that he was also nominated for editing. Same with Alfonso Cuarón for Roma. He got cinematography and they were like, shit, this guy shot his own movie. Director as well, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it's easy vote for voters, I'd say.
Cool. Hey, Zack Snyder also shot his last couple of movies. Where's his Oscar?
He won the fan favorite moment.
Oh, the most important Oscar.
And he won the blockbuster Oscar.
They don't have those categories anymore.
No, they did it once.
Yeah. They did it once and it was a terrible idea. It was so funny when that happened.
It was best fan cheer moment. Oh, my God.
And the Flash moment.
Yes.
So...
Which won because of bots.
Watching that was so cringe because there was not a peep in the audience when it happened. They were like, what the fuck was that? Like, and then I love because Zack Snyder fans are delusional. Yes, you Zack Snyder fans. I always get suggested these pages on Facebook, so I see it all the time.
That's Reddit for me.
Yeah, Jesus. And like, I remember when he won, they were like, congratulations to our Oscar-winning director. And he's photoshopped holding two Oscars. And they're like, oh, finally, the Oscars, we can take it seriously now. Sorry, but I'll be in the cold, dead ground before we recognize Justice League as an Oscar-winning movie.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. I kind of like that movie, but know your place.
Yeah,
know your place.
Okay, so... Best Picture.
Yay.
Nominees, The Brutalist, A Complete Unknown, Conclave, Dune Part 2, Emilia Perez, I'm Still Here, Nickel Boys, The Substance, Wicked, and the winner, Anora.
Yeah.
I think it's the movie we all wanted to win out of these at least.
Yeah, it was. It's worth mentioning that the on Sunday during the day, just amongst us movie nerds, we were like, lock in your choice.
Yeah.
And my choice was Anora.
Yeah.
Cole's,
I said The Brutalist, but I wanted Anora.
Mixed things up. You said.
I said Conclave based on the SAG ensemble.
But you locked it in. You locked in Conclave.
I wanted Anora to win.
We all said we wanted Anora, but I said A Complete Unknown because I thought they were going to play it safe.
So I got to win that one.
I just find it funny that, so in the order, what's under Emilia Perez?
Let me check for you quickly. Emilia Perez, I'm Still Here.
That is Emilia Perez asking, I'm still here in that category.
it's cool.
Very happy. It's a great movie.
Great. Yeah, I'm happy. Anora won 5 Oscars for them being Sean Baker. Fucking crazy.
That's a good night.
Yes.
Very good night.
I can think of him sleeping well. That night. Good.
Yep.
That's good. What is crazy is the fact that, you know, for these actors and for these people, they made this film quite a long time ago. I always think the timelines are funny.
Right.
Because, you know, it played at Cannes, which is in May, early May.
Yes.
And it won it in 2014. It would have needed to have been seen and picked for you know, to be in the contest.
2023, which
So by the end of 2023, they would have wrapped it.
Yeah.
And it's just so wild that in like 2025, you get to sort of reap the rewards of it. People forget the timeline. And they forget how, you know, Mikey Madison's probably done like 2 or 3 movies since.
Yeah.
She's got to remember what it was like to act back in, you know, when they would have shot it would probably have been mid-2023, early 2023.
Yeah. I think it's also a good sign as well, because, I mean, like Graham said, the safe choice would have been a complete unknown, Conclave even. Emilia Perez, musical, Wicked, musical. Like, I'm loving this shift. I mean, every year the Oscars do get some things wrong. Namely, this year, Emilia Perez getting so many nominations.
but we're almost smartening up to it and not actually giving them the awards this time.
That's what I'm saying.
Where in previous years, these films also won.
Yeah. So, like, but you're seeing a shift. The voters are getting younger. They're getting more open-minded. That's why you saw Everything All Everywhere All at Once win 6 Oscars.
And Parasite,
Parasite, you know, like, but then you do get the occasional Green Books and, you know, the Crashes of the World and stuff. But then it's cool that they're awarding a film that is so un-Oscar. I mean, Anora should not be an Oscar caliber. Like, on paper, it's not Oscar caliber in terms of the prestige of, like, these are, you know, straight-laced movies, you know, moving pictures and stuff like that. So it's cool to see something that's so fucking raucous and so wild and so energetic win it.
Yeah, know? And I've been appreciating, as the Bioscope's been able to unlock and screen these movies, that we are getting these young, bold films. You know, that the Nosferatus and the Sean Baker stuff, they're wild. They're vulgar. They're grotesque in some ways. They're filled with all kinds of sex. Mm. You know, they're these bold swings. They don't feel like The English Patient.
Yeah.
To me, that feels like that's the sort of Oscar film, you know?
Beating Goodfellas, come on.
Things. But it's cool that it feels young and energetic.
Mm.
So, yeah. So, lovely, guys. Yes. I would love to take a little moment just to tell you about some of the TV shows. But before we get on to that, last thoughts on Oscars, we happy? Are we good?
Yeah. So, outside of who was actually nominated, who do you guys think should have won Best Picture?
Outside of just
across the whole year, who should have gotten Best Picture? Oh. I'm going to say Sing Sing.
Yeah, no, yeah. That, to me, still deserved so much more. Yeah,
agreed.
I think that was just such a special movie.
Yeah,
and it was doing so much for the world.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Like, it really just it did something.
Yeah, it was really special.
It was about humanity. Mm. You know.
Yeah, outside of the nominations, it was my pick for one of my favorite films of the year was Do Not Expect Too Much from the End of the World.
Oh, yes. You're bringing that up.
That'll never fucking win. But Roddy Jude, man, fucking what a talent. Holy shit.
It's a good question.
And I saw the TV Glow was just like completely neglected.
That was never going to be nominated. It's too left of field.
It is.
Way too left of field. But great movie.
But those movies live on.
Yeah. We were saying next time we do our like favorite picks, we must do our personal categories. So yours is like best gooey. Mine's best big swing. I think I saw the TV Glow's best big swing of the year.
Okay.
Big swing movie.
For me, the most gooey, best gooey would have been Sing Sing.
Oh, yes.
I fucking ugly card.
My favorite jump scare of the year.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Were the leg breaks in
Challenges.
Substance and Challenges. Yeah. There's a leg break in each of those movies.
Big year for leg breaks.
You're just like sitting there and obviously you're like, fuck, Jesus Christ. You know?
That's brutal, eh? Yes.
Like. What can your category be, Peter?
Fuck, I don't know. I haven't thought about that.
You got to give it a thing.
Yeah, I haven't thought about that.
Most obscure gem. And it'd probably be what? Girl with the Needle, black and white Danish film.
Yeah, about a baby killer in 1900s.
Yes.
The most obscure is the most obscure, but brilliant, but fucking brilliant.
Else has heard of it except for Perrin. That's
the best Hang Dong movie. So the best penis in the movie.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's going to Anora as well.
And the award goes to?
The award goes to, where did I see Schlong?
Jesus.
Anora, it was criminally one frame. I was like, come on. We need more deck in this movie, guys.
Nosferatu. Some vampire don.
Oh, of course. Yeah, vampire don. It's Nosferatu.
You know, it really subverted our expectations, you know? Because I know Robert Eggers, you guys saw The Northman, right?
Yeah.
The volcano fight scene where they're fighting naked.
Yes.
He wanted Schlong in that scene.
Yeah.
So we need the dong cut for that.
Release the dong cut.
No, because that would have been such a such a primal scene. These two naked men fighting each other
it's
in a volcano.
It's like a Viggo Mortensen film in the
Eastern
mafia.
Promises.
Yeah. It's like
great
Viggo
scene.
Just like annihilating these oaks with his dick hanging out.
But that's an interesting power flex where it's like, not only are we going to fight, I got an idea.
Let's fight naked.
Got your dick out, dude.
Yeah.
But that's a...
Let's fight naked.
That scene in Eastern Promises, I think it's in a sauna and it's so fucking bloody and he's just naked with peen everywhere.
It's a tough day at the office.
Yeah. I do appreciate a good peen in a movie.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I remember one stage whenever a penis was out, it was immediate NC-17.
Yeah.
Immediate.
Yeah.
Like,
I remember fucking Shame.
Michael Fassbender. Oh,
yo, it's
one of the great,
dude. It's like the best penis.
And he's it's massive.
It's so big.
Most of the time, they're stunt penises.
Just
so you guys
know.
And
that's flaccid peen as well.
Yeah. They're usually stunt penises, just so you guys
know. No. It's not Boogie Night situation. That's a real peen.
Yeah, that's a real peen.
Yeah. We know.
I can tell.
Or the Jane Campion masterpiece. Not the piano. It's called Harvey's Dong.
Oh yeah, he hang dong in Bad Lieutenant as well in front
he
of
he likes
mirror.
To hang dong.
Yeah.
Because he did it in the piano.
Yeah.
Where he's
exactly.
Like, do you want to play the piano or
wanna blow my dick? But Shame, one of the best on screen performances of all time.
Yeah, it's next level.
I'm not talking about his penis,
I'm talking about his dong.
And the award goes to
Michael Fassbender.
Fassbender.
Okay, so that's gonna be our
That's our clip.
Let's make this for a future episode. We're gonna have best hang dong of all
the
time.
Week.
No, of all time.
Okay,
we're gonna
cool,
make a
I got
list
you.
Of a top 10.
When
and
you
we're
said,
gonna talk
when,
about it.
When
you,
I'd
when,
love it.
When you when you introduced that, I was like, is that a Korean filmmaker?
Hang dong.
I'm not familiar with it. I'm not familiar with his work.
I'm not familiar with your game.
That is so bad.
Oh my God.
That is so terrible. I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh. Sorry to the listeners.
No, that was lovely.
Sorry I'm comfortable with my sexuality. Jesus.
That's fine. Yeah. All right. I want to tell you guys very quickly, because I'm sure we've been going on for a bit, about two really great TV shows. The first one is a little more obvious. It's the big Netflix fun comedy called Running Point with Kate Hudson.
Oh.
It's actually worth your time. It is, you can clearly see the group behind it were like, let's do a Ted Lasso.
Mm. Right.
Let's do an American-based Ted Lasso, but a bit more female-centered. So Kate Hudson is part of effectively the Lakers, the LA Lakers, but they're called the LA Waves. In this, and it's a very wealthy family that own the basketball team, and she gets put in charge.
Right.
So it's like the unlikely person at the helm, nice ensemble, so similar to Ted Lasso, how we got to know the players and their different kooky dynamics. Here we got the players as well. And it's good. Cool. Mindy Kaling is behind it. Ike Barinholtz, who are smart comedic writers, are behind it.
Mm.
It's got its moments of silly, just like Ted Lasso, but they're clearly choosing all the things that worked, changing some other things so that it's not identical.
Yeah.
But I immediately thought of Ted Lasso, which is lovable. So we were breezing through it yesterday, which is definitely worth your time. That's over on Netflix.
Cool.
And then another one, and I want to tell this, I'm staring Cole in the eyes for this. A lovely TV show on Disney Plus called No Taste Like Home.
Right.
And it is the show of Anthony Porofsky. Do you know
Queer Eye.
I love you, Queer Eye
so
boy.
We,
yummy. Yeah.
Just
yeah.
Like, yummy.
Just like we have been advocating for Sing Sing over in the television world here at the video store, we love Queer Eye, which if you don't know, I'm going to tell you now, you got fucking 8 seasons of
gooey goodness,
a celebration of what it means to be fucking human.
Yeah.
And all these guys, so it used to be called Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, now it's just Queer Eye. You've got an ensemble cast of very lovable men who specialize in different aspects to help change someone's life. And definitely for me, one of the most lovable is Anthony, who handles the food aspect of someone's life. Often the characters of Queer Eye are people that are too busy to look after themselves. They're too busy doing good for everyone else in their community. They're often quite unhealthy because they just eat frozen food. So he often is the person that comes in to help them come up with quick solutions and healthy habits that can change.
Right.
Lovable dude, handsome.
He's very
so they
he's
now
so hot.
They Jesus. Now all are getting their own shows, and they are now branching off and becoming their own sort of celebrities. So this is a National Geographic show where they've kind of taken the formula of Find Your Roots, which was a very famous TV show where famous celebrities they get their whole lineage researched and they sort of basically sit down and go through a book and goes, oh, your great-grandfather was a slave or did this or invented that. And these people go, oh my God, I can't believe it.
Gotcha.
But Anthony is doing that for famous folk through food.
Oh.
So the starting point is a family recipe.
Right.
And then he'll trace back, obviously a team of researchers, to tell the story of their lineage, but through the food that they would have made,
right.
through the food that they would have eaten. And it's delightful. It is the beautiful formula of Queer Eye, where you get these lovely heartfelt moments. You learn a little bit of fucking history, which is great. But there's delightful moments. The characters that they've gotten for this first season are the likes of Florence Pugh, Awkwafina, Thoreau, Justin Thoreau.
Fuck yeah. The brother to Louis, the cousin to Louis Theroux.
The guy from Beetlejuice. He was Winona Ryder's. Yeah. And he's also in Running Point, the Netflix show.
He has a great dong. Wow.
Okay. Yeah. He actually plays a great character. In Running Point, over on Netflix, he's a coke addict, who actually was in charge of the team, and he goes into rehab, and then he puts Kate Hudson in charge. And
very
he's
cool.
Funny. He's so funny in the show, but yeah, it's delightful. And you go to all parts of the world. It's shot beautifully, especially the Awkwafina one. She wasn't too aware of her Korean heritage.
Okay. Oh, really? Korean?
Yeah, there was a combination of Chinese and Korean, but there was a Korean link.
That's cool.
And just this moment where she sort of feels like she doesn't know anyone or have any link to any heritage, and they're in this village, and he's like, everyone in this village is your family. Because that's how it works, cool. right?
Yes.
You have to, you keep this whole family in this village, and if you want to marry, you got to marry someone from another village.
Yeah.
Yes.
But he's like, everyone in this village is your family, and she just breaks down. It's great.
On the related note to the Oscars in this discussion,
yeah,
one of the funny things that Conan O'Brien has said at one point is that he did an ancestry test.
Yeah.
And he said, like, it's extremely rare when you're 100% one thing.
Yeah.
He's 100% Irish.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm pretty sure I'm a result of incest.
Sure.
Because like you said, like even in Ireland, there are people who are like 70% Irish and like 20% Scottish or this. And he's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm a result of incest.
Funny. In Iceland, there is a website that you can use to not work out if the person you're dating is a family member. It's how much of a family member they are.
Oh, wow.
Because Iceland is just
so
remote.
Tiny.
Yeah.
Everyone in Iceland could fit in Soccer City.
I see.
And they're also the horniest people in the world.
No. Sorry, really? I'm lying. It's 300,000.
There's a study.
Okay. Wow.
Like, it's there's 300,000 people in
still very little people.
Yeah,
it's like the amount based on the amounts of sex they have on average.
Well, what else is there to do?
Yeah, it's a beautiful country. They just fuck.
Yeah, they used to be Vikings. So
yeah. But listen, on that note, guys.
Yeah.
It was lovely. Perrin, go get some sleep.
Thanks.
Yeah.
No, we honestly appreciate you.
Being our guy on the front
Being
lines.
Our guy. Previous Oscar episodes, we had a Cole once that did the live watch.
Mm.
This time last year, the Bioscope was open for a TikTok event.
Jeez.
Oh, that's
so we had
cool.
where we had influencers stay the whole night at the Bioscope.
That's very cool.
I'd left by like 1 in the morning.
Yeah.
Because at that point I was
it's a young man's game, man.
Yeah.
It is
yeah.
a young man's game. All right. But Lekker, thank you guys. We appreciate you for listening. Mm. And our home base is the videostore.co.za. And we hope to see you again next week.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
TTFN.
Boy.
Tune in next week for Hang Dong episode.